evening, everyone. Welcome to Tuesday, February 11th edition of the City Council meeting for the City of Aurora Grande. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George.
Here.
Councilmember Paulding.
Here.
Councilmember Barnage.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Storton.
Here.
Mayor Ray Russom.
Here. Would you please join me in a moment of reflection? Tonight, I'll be leading us in the flag salute, so will you please stand and join me.
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Tonight, for item 5, we have no closed session announcements, and can we have someone please move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And none opposed. Motion carries. Tonight, we do have a special presentation that we're excited about. I will throw this over to City Manager Bergman.
Thank you, Mayor, Council Members. Jim Bergman, your City Manager. Tonight, we are going to introduce a new employee for the City of Aurora Grande, and this is our new Director of Community Development, and her name is Whitney McDonald. And there is Whitney right there. She might come up and say a few words, but I just wanted to say a few things. Whitney is a well-known land use professional in the county of San Luis Obispo. She has a degree from University of California, Santa Barbara, and then she also has a law degree from University of California, Los Angeles. She has been a practicing attorney. Her previous experience includes serving as deputy county counsel for the county of San Luis Obispo. She was assigned to pretty much every land use issue and permit that went through the county of San Luis Obispo, so she has a wide range of experience. She is someone who believes in our mission of public service and to help the community. She's a problem solver. She's a great strategist, and she's a great leader and a partner. So I wanted to introduce Whitney, and she's in the office now. She's getting a whole bunch of emails, and she'll be out meeting our planning commissioners. She's already been introduced to the planning commission as a whole. She'll meet with council members. She'll meet with a lot of people from the public. So if you're interested in meeting Whitney, she will be available for meetings. So with that, maybe I'll just let Whitney say hi.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, and thank you to your city manager for that really warm welcome, and to all of you for all of your warm welcomes as well, and to staff and all the support that I've already gotten. I'm really excited to be here, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. I can't wait to sit down and do really good work together for the community. It seems from everything that I've been seeing, there's a lot of exciting work to be done, and I really look forward to accomplishing all the goals that the city has set out and working together to, you know, bring good things for all of your citizens. So thank you very much, and I'm just really excited to be here. So thank you.
Welcome. Thank you so much. That takes us quickly, though. Already number 7, this is Community Comments and Suggestions. This is a chance for the community to come up and talk about items that are not on tonight's agenda. And please limit your comments to 3 minutes or less and address the council as a whole. Good evening.
Good evening, Mayor, Council Persons, staff. My name is Linda Osti. I live in the village of Aurora Grande on Cherry Street, right across the street from all the new houses. And I'd like to offer an invocation. Eternal God, I pray that you bless us in this meeting and keep us. Lord, make your face shine on us and be gracious to us. I pray that we feel your presence during this meeting because you are with us wherever we go. I pray that this meeting focuses upon you and your plans for us as a body of believers. Let our actions in this meeting be valuable to our aim, which is to build and edify one another. This we ask in Jesus' name. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to speak on items that are not on tonight's agenda? Seeing no one, I'll close public comment and move along to item 8. This is consent agenda. We only have three items tonight on the consent agenda. Is there anyone who would like to pull something for separate consideration or questioning?
Just 10A. I wanted to just have some update on that.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. I am going to pull 8B to continue the discussion that we were having last time. I'm sorry, Kristen, did you want to just ask questions? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead and do that now? I'm sorry?
10A.
8A? We're on the consent agenda.
Oh, sorry. Hang on.
Thank you.
No, nope, never mind. Thank you. I was moving really quickly ahead.
Okay, so then the only one to discuss for separate consideration is 8B, and that's me. So, Mr. Bergman, we had some discussion about this just in our regular meeting with regard to the low-income development impact fees. And I don't know, this is more conceptual than it is nuts and bolts, but maybe you can talk about what we talked about, or I can either way.
Sure. Well, let me give it a shot, and I'm sorry for that noise. Back at our last housing element update, the state recommended that we consider some sort of tiered impact fee so that housing that's trying to be developed at an affordable rate is not subject to the same fees and perhaps given an advantage to be built or help it be built. And we all know that that's the type of housing that's not being built in this community or other communities as much as needed. So we did implement a tiered rate, and it said for moderate and low-income housing, there was a reduced rate that we charge our impact fees. But for very low housing, very affordable housing for very low incomes, there's no fee, and we were able to confirm that during this time we have not collected fees on very low income housing projects.
And going back to that discussion, even the low impact ones we have not collected on in quite some time, correct?
That's correct. It's rare to get those type of projects where they might mix the income mix. Most of our projects that are affordable have been affordable to very low incomes, and so didn't require impact fees.
So my question to the council would be, if we are seeing only very low income housing come through and we're exempting those fees, and we're seeing market rate come through, and we've got those fees, but we're not seeing anything come through in between, that maybe it's time for us to eliminate that as well and to encourage that level of housing as well. And we went through those because I wanted to know what the impact to the budget would be. And the answer was they're not being built, so we don't have anything in our budget that we would be losing, except that, of course, if a project's coming through, we're losing we would be investing staff time in the project. So there would be costs in that way, but not in terms of losing money that's coming in that we've planned on or budgeted for.
Could we get a quantitative dollar value for or a percentage for what low income and very low income brackets would be?
They're in the staff report, so let me, and I think I might have put it in the last one as well. So what you would do in the current staff report is just in each one of the fee levels, you would just add up whatever the per unit charge would be. Sorry, I'm looking for the last one because that's where my notes were to answer your question. Or maybe Jim could answer it. Per unit for a single family residence at market rate, all of those impact fees add up to $9,372, so nearly $10,000 a unit. For low income, that would be $3,195 per low income unit, and of course for very low, it's zero.
Right, so I guess I'm asking, what are the qualifications for low income and very low income? Am I not seeing that? That should be is that a percentage of income? What is that?
So as you're seeing, when you get into impact fees, it becomes very in-depth very quickly. I would recommend if your council would like to see more information about our specific impact fees and being able to consider modifying them, that we put that on a list here for Ms. McDonald and her department, and we could come back in the next, certainly I'll say within, I'll say 6 months, and let's see what you say. If you wanted to come back sooner than that, we could do an analysis to give you these numbers. How often is it going to happen? How much do we expect it will impact our funds, as well as what we think it's going to do to inspire more housing? So that's a recommendation that we.
And then with the update of the housing element, it might be something that we might have to consider both at the same time. Because if we have direction towards a housing element in one way, then that might determine whether or not we need to include low or leave low out.
It's certainly going to be part of the housing element, but I would love to see what your time frame would be. It'd be probably more long-term if it's going in the housing element, up to a year, but if there's something where you wanted to act more immediately, we could do that also.
I don't see a whole lot of reason to wait 6 months, especially since we have those numbers that Nicole gave us at our meeting.
That's right.
So it's not, the staff has already done the work. So,
yeah, I just, she's getting a pretty big list of work that we need done, and she's going to be prioritizing that. And if you wanted to see that prioritization and how this stands in that, you can. Or if you just want to give us direction to start working on it right now, we could do that too. And like the mayor says, probably most of the information we have, it's just a matter of putting together the staff report and do some additional analysis if needed.
A couple of comments. One, when I looked through this, it made me think about our inclusionary housing ordinance and in-lieu fees and how that's a separate fee entirely. But when we're looking at incentives for bringing in particular types of housing or making it easier to build those types of housing, I think that that's an important policy mechanism that kind of goes into that discussion. I know the county, for example, has exempted from the in-lieu fee housing ordinance any home that's under the size of, I think, 2,200 square feet. So if we could have a broader discussion about all the different types of fees, different types of housing, and then essentially see where the council's at there, that to me would be a more comprehensive way to address this specific item. That would be my initial thought.
I agree with that.
When is the housing element coming forward?
We've just signed a contract not too long ago, and I would assume that it's going to be, it needs to be completed within the next year, the calendar year, I believe.
I have one question.
Yeah, move your mic towards you, though.
As we're looking at our two-year financial plan, and of course we have our 10-year financial plan, are any of these numbers projected forward through either of those? And would that timing be important as we look at our upcoming budget?
I would assume that they're on a table somewhere that's used by our finance people, because we do try to estimate how much revenue is coming in at each fund. So you may be able to see some more of that in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. So maybe trying to address that in relationship to our housing element as well as our budget process. I'm not sure.
Karen, what was the 9,372 was? It wasn't low. And
that's
it wasn't
regular
single-family. Single-family, okay.
Yeah.
And then I assume if we're going to bring this back and staff's going to have information on it that's more in-depth than what we're looking at, there'll be a breakdown of, if you look at these development impact fees, how much staff time, because if we wipe these away, I would just be curious to know how much staff time that is taken on each unit. I assume that's where we get the fee, but just to confirm that. So if we were to wipe something like this away or reduce the fees, then are there any other fees that I'm not thinking of that are taken in by a developer to help accommodate staff time in putting the project together?
So impact fees, very specifically for very specific reasons. We do charge applicants their processing fee. That is also based on how much it costs us on average to produce a project. We also have the ability to charge base rate, so by the time. If it's an unusual project, it's going to take a lot of time or a short time, we may be able to look at it that way. And you'll see that impact fees are based on studies. You're trying to find an actual nexus to mm-hmm. the fees. But lowering a fee, I would assume it, we may be able to do that much quicker than actually establishing new fees or raising fees.
I wonder if the, you know, we do have a discussion coming up here about what to do about the economic development ad hoc committee, and maybe, you know, this council has said that affordable housing is a piece of that, so maybe that's a good time to have the rest of this discussion. With that, are there any other questions? We'll go ahead and open this up to public comment. Is there anyone who would like to come up to speak on any of the items 8A through 8C? Don't hurt yourselves now. Okay, well then I'll close public comment and bring this back to the council for consideration. And we can include 8B. I just wanted to have that discussion.
Move to approve consent items A through C.
Second.
Motion is second. Any discussion? Can we get roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes. We have no items 9 public hearings tonight, so that takes us to item 10. This is old business. Consideration of adoption of a resolution pursuant to Public Contract Code Section 22050, finding a determination to continue work under emergency contracts for the Oak Park Boulevard and El Camino Real Emergency Storm Drain System Repair Project, Public Works 2020-04. I'm excited to hear about this one tonight.
Thank you. I'm glad there's excitement about a Public Works project. I'm Bill Robeson, your Public Works Director. So I'd like to give you an update and talk about a few of the details. First of all, we would like to continue on with this emergency resolution. The situation is becoming less emergent, although it's still in an unsafe situation. So I'll get into that in just a moment. But again, this allows us to move forward with CalPortland in a sole source process and allow them to do work that we would normally have to go through an RFP process. So the emergency situation that's been approved by your council allows us to do that. So let me just kind of give you some background and take you through kind of this line drawing that's over an aerial photo. So just to orient you, North Highway 101 is at the top of the screen, South Highway 101, and then we have the overpass Oak Park Boulevard. And then this is the piece of property that we've been working on for the past month and evaluating that piece of property. This is where the work is most intense, where this void is located. And again, the flooded area was the original problem we encountered, but then there are numerous issues that we faced and we're fixing at this point. So we have a strategy now, and these gold-colored pipes, storm pipes, stormwater system, they are functioning well at this point. So this is our Sierra Drive that crosses... Our Sierra Drive stormwater pipe that crosses Oak Park and then hooks up with a pipe about 30 feet under the ground and then outlets into a Caltrans culvert. I'm sorry, a Caltrans 8x7 culvert box or box culvert. And then this is Chilton. We have a bubble up. It's actually around in this area. And there's quite a bit of water that comes down from this watershed. You've driven up there probably. It's pretty steep. There's a lot of homes up there, and a lot of water makes its way to this drainage inlet here, and then all the way down underneath the ground at this point, and then goes into this manhole. So the manhole was the problematic area, the main problematic area. Sorry, the main insult. I even changed it over here. very hard. I will. So the void, there was a erosion in this pipe system, and that water and the velocity of the water coming down into this area made that void underneath the ground. So the strategy that we have is still to abandon this section of pipe, which is deep in the ground, and this section of pipe, which is connected to the El Camino drainage inlet, and have a new drainage pipe sections, which are in light yellow here in dashed line, and they would hook up to the Caltrans system that is located in this shoulder area and the slope, and then down into a Caltrans drainage inlet that I'm pointing to here in this small blue box. So we've been able to get in contact with Caltrans and make some headway thanks to the mayor. She's given us some great contact points so that we can talk to their staff in a more time-efficient way and actually meet with them out on the property, because that meeting was really critical, because it's difficult to see the topography here and what we're dealing with, because this drainage inlet is at a really low elevation. And for us to do other types of strategies to fix this type of drainage problem would be very expensive, very time-consuming, and also shut down this intersection for a while, and then this at least half of Oak Park for weeks. We'd have to open up large holes in this area, etc., or we would do a large bore pit here on private property, which is problematic, and then have to go all the way across and meet up to this point. There's a lot of details in that, but the easiest, most time, the safest, most time efficient, and budget effective strategy is to do just to follow this kind of alignment that we see here. So we've had to do hydraulic calculations. Those have come back showing that we do have quite a bit of water in this area, and we anticipated that, but we didn't anticipate quite as much as the calculations show. So what we're going to be talking with Caltrans about is obviously using these alignments to go onto Caltrans right away, hook into their system, but not only hook into their system, we would have to enlarge this pipe at this location that goes underneath the overpass. So it's a profile 15. We'd have to go to a larger pipe, and it's a 24-inch in diameter pipe. Luckily, the alignment is not in the roadway. It's not even in the asphalt. It's actually in the dirt areas along the shoulder. So the closure issues or safety issues become a lot less problematic. So keep that in mind, and I'm just going to go over some of the more recent photos. So I did outline this, and I forgot to press that button, but there it is. Here, around here, is it's basically the area that we're dealing with Caltrans on, and getting cooperation from them. This is a close-up of that. This is the void, and we drew this. I got feedback from one of our staff members, Dan Keyes, that went down into this shaft. We lowered him down in there. Very tense for me. And not only him, but me as well. And the description that he gave me and that we drew is pretty accurate. The void goes about 15 feet back onto the Christmas tree lot, onto the DeChance property. And then this part of the void, which is about 3 feet, it goes back up under the roadway. So this was the first kind of scrape with the excavator. And this area just caved in. And we thought it would, but I thought it would take a little while longer. This is really thin, a lot... No, we wouldn't do any trapdoor things to anybody. But so it's difficult to see, but this void goes 20 feet down, but it also caved in, so the bottom elevation came up. But these pictures are difficult to see, kind of the depth. But this is what we were dealing with, and I'll show you a few more pictures about what that void looked like. So that's kind of what the void looked like after we've taken some of the fill material that fell down and made a ramp so that the excavator could start to safely go down into that, into the void and start removing the piping and a large concrete collar that was under the ground. So this is the top of the manhole. It's great. I mean, it's old. And then polyethylene pipe, or actually the high-density epoxy pipe, goes down to this point, and then you'll see this. This was the collar that goes on top of that. Very unorthodox way of building a manhole, but this is what we were dealing with. Maintenance hole. This kind of be better. Another.
It's like a swear jar we need for you.
I think it'll be full. So this collar was at the top. You can see the plastic pipe. It had eroded out and developed the void. There was also some openings down in this corrugated metal pipe. So that's a 20-foot depth right there. It went lower, but again, there was a lot of material that fell in when that kind of lid of that void was being excavated out. So it's a little jump. I jump a little bit, but this is what the void looks like now. It's all filled in and compacted. This is a bubble up from the Chilton pipe. So the Chilton pipe will remain underground, hit this bubble up, and then surface drain around this corner for the time being. There's a couple other shots. So
Bill, can I ask you a quick question?
Absolutely. Sure.
So the work that's been done to fill that in and get it to drain the way it's going to drain for now, was done by CalPortland or by city staff?
No, all this was done by CalPortland.
Okay.
City staff, I mean, I was out there some. Dan Keyes was kind of leading
right.
the project and making sure that... you know, he supervised the work and signed off on the daily sign-offs and things like that. But the actual work was done by CalPortland.
Okay. Thank you.
So, tomorrow, hopefully, we will... the next steps are tomorrow. We're going to interface with Caltrans, show them some of these pictures, show them our hydraulic calculations and a conceptual drawing. It's a little bit more engineering than this, but it's, you know, this is a kind of a conceptual, so it's more graphic. But the engineer drawings have a lot more design or a black line and a lot more information on them. We are hoping to get all of the traffic control that you see now out of that area by Friday. So we're going to close it up. It's going to be safe for people to pass through, although... We still have a kind of an emergency situation in this area because this water has nowhere to flow at this point. So we're gonna talk with Caltrans to see if we can get a temporary pipe. The other alternative is to have our crews, you know, be on call and pump that water over this down onto the slope when there's a rain incident. So. I don't see rain in the next week or so, which is unfortunate, but it is fortunate that we don't have a lot of rain because we would have to be pumping and taking this water somewhere. That concludes my presentation, and I can answer any more questions that you have.
Any questions?
Yes, thank you. I have some questions regarding the all of it. So I guess I'll just start. When you say that the alternative, which is adding two more pipes and going along the Caltrans right away, is more time efficient and costs less than trying to clear out the existing pipe, do we have numbers to back that up? Because there's no numbers in our staff report.
We don't have hard numbers. We talk with our engineering, our consulting engineers, and we talk with Cal Portland about kind of the scope of those projects. And it's pretty obvious when we start talking about the amount of time and the amount of excavation that we're going to need to do because of the depth, that it's going to cost much more than doing these type of alignments, because these are relatively shallow pipes, so we don't have to dig, you know, 20 feet deep. We're probably in the 6-foot range in this area, and in this area we're even more shallow. So excavation is the thing that kind of drives the cost up, along with the shoring and other engineering components.
So from the last presentation that you gave us 2 weeks ago, how much work was done? Was the box culvert cleared out like it was supposed to be cleared out?
The box culvert was cleared out.
So you cleared it out like you were supposed to. Then you went through and you tried to inject water in to clear the pipe.
Exactly.
And you couldn't clear it.
We could not clear it in this area, and then we couldn't clear it in this area as well.
Okay.
So it did help with the drainage from the Sierra Drive area. So we were able to put our jet and hose all the way down into this, get through this weird manhole underneath AJ Spurs and come to this area, but then it stops right about in this location. And it's from what our staff or our crew is telling us, it's not soft. It's some kind of a really hard material, so it's not making its way through that at all.
And Cal Portland was the company that handled that, correct? That clearing out, or did we do that?
Cal Portland handled the removal of the sediment and the debris in the box culvert. Our staff did the jetting and the camera work.
Okay.
And we also had a camera that's longer, much longer than ours, from a consultant that we use also.
So the amount of money that we allocated 2 weeks ago for Cal Portland, did they use all of those funds? So are we talking about additional funds moving forward, or are there funds because we were unable to complete this project that are going to move forward?
No, from what I can see now, the Cal Portland is going to be giving us more numbers, but it's going to cover the work that we've done to date and to finish up on Friday, but it will not cover the work that's going to be done, you know, in this yellow, in the yellow alignment.
Okay, so the amount of money that we allocated that we hoped would be enough to fix the whole project will only get us through till where we are now. So anything above today, past today, will be an additional amount.
I wouldn't say past today, but they'll be working until probably Friday morning, and that money will take us to Friday morning. Although I don't think it's going to be the entire $177,000. I don't want to guess, but I can ballpark it in the $130,000 range for this portion. So we'll hopefully have somewhere in a $40,000 you know, savings that we can allocate to the next project. But that's going to be something that we're looking at, is how we're going to move CIP money around to cover this next piece,
next
phase.
So will we need to close El Camino Real when construction is being done to build those two new drain pipes?
Yes.
And so, how long is that process, do you
believe? Well, since it's so shallow, I'm hoping that it's only a couple of days. So we'll excavate, and we'll get it all ready to go, so we can put the pipe in and backfill, and then put plates over those areas so that they can be passable, hopefully, each day. But during work times, it'll be closed. But hopefully the actual excavation, putting the pipe in, compacting back the soil, and then putting those plates down, and then finally hot mix to cap with asphalt. I'm hoping it's about 3 days or so.
So currently, the Chilton drain, that's been fixed, correct? And now it's just going to divert up to the surface drain that you showed us a picture of?
Yeah, so that surface drain is temporary. Go back to that. This drain, it's temporary until we take, so it's temporary to allow that all that water to move down this curb gutter and sidewalk and around that corner. The most efficient, safe, controlled way is to take that water underground. So we would hook up with the existing pipe, put a junction box, and take it all the way through this to this alignment. So, yes, that would be the ultimate and best way to fix that area.
And that's a natural slope. So right now, if it goes up the surface drain, it'll naturally just go down and to the right over to El Camino.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you so much. Those are my questions.
I just have one question. Have we considered directional boring as an alternative to...
We have. Okay. So that's a great question. We've considered directional boring in a lot of phases of this, and we're still looking at directional boring here. The reason I haven't gone to that already is because we have to see what that profile shows and what kind of piping systems. There's quite a few things in there, not as much as Oak Park Boulevard. There's a ton of petroleum lines in this alignment, which are really problematic for us. They're not in this El Camino section, so hopefully we can do directional boring, and then that would alleviate that closure to a certain degree. But I didn't want to go there yet until I can get confirmation on whether that's a viable solution.
Thank you.
Just one question, Bill. If and when we do the work on the Highway 101 area, that's not going to have to be closed because it's not in the roadway at all. It won't even have to be kind of not even one lane down. It's far enough away.
Yeah, that's a good question. We don't think so, but that's what Caltrans is going to give us some feedback on. Hopefully, if it does close, we can close it at night, and that's a much less intense traffic period. So most of the work, though, will be done off the shoulder, but, you know, Caltrans has their protocols, and if there's any safety issues, then we'll close that and route traffic around this area where we're doing work.
And then what did you say that you guys think the approximate time the whole project would take?
I'm not sure if I said that yet.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to venture yet. I would like to talk with Caltrans, okay. And then I can give you an update on kind of how that's working, and then that'll put kind of those pieces of the puzzle together for me to give you a time frame.
Okay, but really, no matter how long it takes, the impacts will be Highway 101, perhaps, we don't know, and then El Camino Real, and you're talking about working on that and then putting down the covers so that it's not impacted the whole time. That's pretty much the impacts, worst-case scenario, those two areas, correct?
Correct. That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, and again, they're shallow, so it's much easier to handle than going down and trying to fix these sections, which are so deep into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Pro Tem.
Thank you. Yeah, I just have one question. Great questions by everybody else. At the section where there's the maintenance hole cover inside AJ Spurs, wherever that may be.
Yes.
So as you look at the red line going towards the north, is there a cap right at that area where there's the fill and abandon, so there's no further flow when we have a rain event that's going to continue to push sediment down that section so we have a problem underneath the parking lot?
Is there a cap at this location?
Yeah, how does that work so there's no more problems at our next rain event with water flowing into that section that has just been cleared?
So there is a slurry poured down this section of pipe. So it went all the way down. We don't know how far it went, but it plugged. And so this section of pipe is slurry sealed. It's with a concrete slurry. So as far as dealing with this section, we'll camera that, and if we need to, we'll send slurry up this and cap that in this area so that there's no issues. We're still debating on what to do with this manhole, but maintenance hole, it serves as a junction box, and it just is a connection for that. So we have to keep that open, but that's a great question. We will seal it and do an adequate seal here so that there's no issues in the future with either drainage making its way down there or some kind of compaction if that pipe were to collapse in 30 or 40 years.
Okay, thank you.
I just have a couple questions. I thought I remembered in our initial presentation that the Chilton drainage was taking in an extraordinary amount of debris. Mm-hmm. And I heard you say tonight that it's functioning properly, so I'm unclear about that now.
So what we've done is we've backfilled this whole curb system back here, packed it, so that when the water comes down Chilton, it makes its way in a relatively clean state versus going down into the dirt and the ground area and undermining this area and then just bringing with it all kinds of sediment and debris. So we've camered that to make sure that it's clear, and it is. So this curb system is really important, and it goes all the way back, even off the screen. And that curb system was undermined. It had holes in it. People drive over it. People parked on it. And so we're going to have to deal with that in a more permanent way by just making a more permanent curb system there. When we did have development proposals on this property, there was always a requirement, a condition of approval to have this taken care of by the developer. And then some other issues along down Oak Park. So, yeah, at this point, it's functioning very, very open and clear. So
the upshot of that discussion that you just had is that we've got ongoing maintenance that has to happen here.
Yes.
That's pretty timely stuff. And so piggybacking now, I heard you say the people are parking there. I don't recall ever seeing people parking on that side, but I don't drive that street every day. Is it worth us spending just a little bit of money to red curb that and put some no parking on there?
Yes. So we've been thinking about that. We're going to red curb that or put no parking signs on the fence. We've also talked to some of the neighbors. I've never seen parking there, although our street crews go out there and they pretty frequently see some kind of work commercial trucks that people use. Maybe they take them home and they park there in the evening. So they kind of run over everything, and it's just been years of that. So, yeah, we're going to take care of that so that people can't park there anymore.
So maybe that could be part of our phase two design?
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
And we still need eventually a maintenance hole, kind of a new one, in the AJ Spurs parking lot, correct? So is that going to be part of the phase two thing, or is that just something we're going to partner with Grover on someday?
You know, since this is kind of a direct line now, we can access this, and we can access this line at this point. So,
we don't need it?
We don't really need that a new maintenance hole anymore. That's a significant cost as well. That was driving up the cost of the other Plan B and Plan C because we would have to open up a huge hole in this area to put that maintenance hole in it.
Which takes me to my next question, because that addresses Councilmember George's concerns about, you know, how do we know that this, I'll call it the yellow project, based on what we're seeing up there versus what we'd originally said is going to be different. And what I heard from staff, and as I got on the horn dealing with Caltrans and the assemblyman, was because of the depth going across Oak Park, the width is where the cost is, right? Can you expand on that just a little bit, because
sure,
that helps understand why we really don't need to go get numbers to know that that's going to cost so much more.
Sure. So when our engineers and we all met as a group, and Cal Portland as well, we started talking about putting a new maintenance hole here or fixing this section of pipe. But then we realized it was 30 feet down, and we'd have to dig down and put a new section of pipe in there to take out the clog room. That's pretty obvious. But to do that depth, we would have to dig about a 45-foot diameter hole. And that alone and the depth with that requires some really significant engineered shoring.
And not to mention the shutdown of Oak Park.
Exactly. And the cost to engineer that, we were getting numbers at $100,000 just to do the shoring portion. And that's a significant piece of that. And then, we have other even more expensive portions that would have to take place to fix that. But the danger in that is really, it's just horrible to have crews go down there. Even when there's engineered shoring, you have people working down there trying to quickly get this pipe out. There's hand digging. It's difficult to get equipment down there, and that's just a really, really complicated project.
Okay, great. And I guess that's the end of my questions. So if there are no more piggybacks, let's go ahead and open this up to public comment. Would anyone like to speak on this item?
Good evening. Ron Riley with Garen Taylor and Associates. I'm the engineer for the hotels that are proposed to go on the other side of Man Rock there. So basically on the outlet side of the box culvert. So I know a couple things about the culvert, and this just being brought to my attention right now. Probably a private meeting at some point would be in order, but I happen to know, under the 100-year storm, that box culvert is fully charged, and I think that your flooding, therefore, in El Camino may be a continued issue, and you might want to take advantage of this time now to maybe take care of that in the long run. But just from some information that I have that it occurred to me might be worth sharing here. So maybe sometime in the next week or two we could step aside, and Robin and you and I could talk. So,
sure.
Anyways, I never got to speak at this council before, so nice to see everybody. And I just came actually to see the introduction of the new community development director. Welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for your offer to help. Would anyone else like to come forward? Okay, seeing no one, I'll close public comment and bring it back to us. And I will start just briefly by, I want to make sure that I do not take all the credit for moving the ball when we ran into a significant issue with Caltrans, basically not returning our calls because we're just little itty-bitty Aurora Grande. And yes, I used my contacts, and so did Assemblyman Cunningham, and he was instrumental in that as well. I very much appreciate the working relationship that I enjoy with Assemblyman Cunningham, and we were able to together really just get things done just within a couple of hours through that relationship. So I'm grateful for that, and I want to make sure that I don't take full credit, that was a partnership, very much so. So thanks to him. Any comments? We do, I believe, need to make a motion, however. Would someone like to do so as I fire up my tablet?
Oh, can I add one thing?
Yeah. Before?
So we're looking at the 25th, your council meeting on the 25th of February to close the emergency portion of this. So there is an end coming.
I'm sorry, what date was that?
February 25th. Okay. Sorry.
Our next council meeting?
Yes.
So I'll move to adopt a resolution that there is a need to continue the emergency action for the storm drain system repairs in accordance to Public Contract Code Section 22050, and we'll file and receive the updated report.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnett?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russin?
Yes. Thank you so much to staff who's been living this every day. Appreciate that. That takes us to item 11A. This is new business. This is consideration of introduction of an ordinance repealing the city's expanded polystyrene ordinance and adopting by reference the Integrated Waste Management Authority's ordinance regulating polystyrene and expanded polystyrene food containers and products, and schedule a public hearing to consider its adoption. City Manager Bergman.
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. So this is a consideration to introduce an ordinance prohibiting the sale of polystyrene or expanded polystyrene food containers. As was mentioned, this was an ordinance that was passed by the Integrated Waste Management Authority of San Luis Obispo County, which is a JPA of all the agencies in the county that tries to work together and have one regional unified group that does our waste collection in our county. So this ordinance is more restrictive than the current ordinance that the City Council of Arroyo Grande passed in 2016, and it's more restrictive in the fact that it restricts the use of food containers, including product packaged outside the city but sold in the city. And the best example that we could think of at this time is the raw food containers. So if you buy chicken or meat or other raw food in the store, it usually comes on a expanded polystyrene tray. And this is the part that this ordinance is trying to address throughout the county. In the staff report, it's listed the problems with polystyrene and expanded polystyrene with its impact on the environment, wildlife. And also we've been talking recently about difficulties in recycling of all of the stuff that we use as a community. We're in short recommending that the council would repeal their existing ordinance, replace it, and reference this IWMA ordinance in its entirety. And if you were to introduce that item, we could schedule it for adoption on March 10th, 2020. So a very short presentation. I can answer any questions. We also have a City Attorney Carmel who might know a little bit about this also.
Okay. Any questions of staff?
Just a quick question. As far as this goes, it's a little bit more strict. So is it just going to be based on complaints? Or are we going to actually visit businesses that might have these? And I don't know what the IWMA suggests or what they do.
From a practical standpoint, I probably receive about 3 calls a year from people when they notice that a business in the city is using polystyrene. Usually we go out with our code enforcement officer. They just make them aware of the ordinance, and compliance happens pretty quickly. You know, since this is an IWMA ordinance that is going further than where we are, we talk to staff. You know, our first effort is if someone needs enforcement needs to be done on this, is if we're contacted, we'll be contacting the IWMA and try to get them to use their powers and their ordinance to affect that change that's needed.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Questions?
Just 2 quick questions. The first is that our ordinance is superseded by the IWMA ordinance, making ours invalid at this point in time. Is that correct? No.
It's still on our books, so there's some weird conflict because It applies to the whole county, but we have this ordinance that's different from it, and that's part of the motivation to make it all consistent.
Okay. And then what type of outreach will we be doing to the business community just to make sure that they're aware of this change?
Oh, I was hoping he was turning that on, but he turned it off.
I can help answer.
Oh, please. I would love to have some assistance.
As the city's representative of the IWMA, one of the purposes for IWMA is to do outreach. So within that entity itself, they have already done outreach to solicit ideas and talk about potential solutions for the issue. So they do that on their own as part of our funds that we all pay into to make sure that information gets out there. So I don't think there's anything that the city needs to do. In 2016, when we enacted our ordinance, I talked to Chief Pryor in doing some research, and he said there were 2 complaints for 2 places that couldn't comply with takeout issues and using polystyrene, and they just went and talked to him and cleared up the violations, and since then they've had no problems. So this is just a little bit more of a oomph to the ordinance, and I think really it's just going to be a matter of education, and enforcement will be minimal.
Excellent. Thank you for the clarification, Mayor Pro Tem.
No question. Nor do I. Is there anyone in the audience? Let's open this up for public comment. Anyone have anything to say on this one? Okay, then I'll close public comment and bring it back to the council. I don't know if we need so much commentary as if someone would want to volunteer that or make a motion.
I would move to introduce an ordinance repealing the city's expanded polystyrene ordinance and adopting by reference the Integrated Waste Management Authority's ordinance regulating polystyrene and expanded polystyrene food containers and products and schedule a public hearing to consider its adoption.
Second.
No, I know. I knew. I was reading that, and I knew Tim was going to say, no, that's not going to.
If you can read the title of the ordinance from the ordinance itself, which I'd be glad to do.
Go ahead.
This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande repealing and replacing Chapter 8.34 of the Rio Grande Municipal Code relating to expanded polystyrene and adopting by reference Ordinance Number 2019-1 of the San Luis Obispo County Integrated Waste Management Authority regulating polystyrene and expanded polystyrene food containers and products.
Okay, second holds. Any discussion? Okay, we have a motion, a second. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Storton?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russell?
Yes. Item 11B is...
Madam Mayor?
Oh, yes, sir.
The second action needs to take place. Let's set the public hearing for March 10th.
Oh.
When you do these adoption by reference ordinances, you have to schedule a public hearing prior to adoption. It's a peculiarity, but it's necessary.
So okay. Moved.
Second.
Mayor Pro Tem 1, I think. So we have a motion and a second. Will you roll call?
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Storton?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russell?
Yes. And with that, we go on to item 11B. This is consideration of establishing a City Council ad hoc committee related to strategic concepts.
Thank you, Mayor. Council members, at your last council meeting, you talked about strategic concepts. During that discussion, there was interest to learn more about ad hoc committees of the City Council. There was probably numerous reasons why that might be beneficial. One that took notice for me is that a potential use of an ad hoc committee would be to assist staff in creating a more presentable or effective format to be used for the council and staff as we go forward to talk to the community about strategic concepts. Because of ad hoc committees or standing committees, the Brown Act gets involved, and we do have our city attorney here who can answer a lot of questions, get into details. If you're going to have an ad hoc committee, they're exempt from Brown Act noticing. Means that you have to have less than a quorum, which would be two or less people. Generally, it's required that ad hoc committees have a defined task that they're working on and a time frame of when they'll be done, and then they return back to the full council for consideration of any product that came from that ad hoc committee. There is another option available to you is a standing committee. So that, again, involves less than a quorum. It can include members from outside of the council, that does require Brown Act noticing of meetings and public attendance. With that, our recommendation is for you to discuss the use of ad hoc committees or standing committees, and if you want to establish one of those, to give us direction and to remember for ad hoc, it's who's going to be on it, what the assignment is, and the duration of work. With that, you could ask all the questions you want of City Attorney Carmel.
Who would like to start?
As far as questions?
Yes.
Or as far as
questions.
So is there a standard practice where you have the ad hoc committee first and then at that point determine whether or not there is a need for a standing committee?
You go first. I don't have experience in it, so I'm hoping here with...
There's no defined process. A lot of times the ad hoc will come back, deliver its report, and that's all you need. It may trigger the need for something else, but that's where you start.
And is an ad hoc committee, is there a definitive end date? So if we say 30 days, or can it be just as long as we need?
No,
in 30 days.
It's very flexible. Okay. You need to have a product. I mean, you can't be open-ended. But you don't need a specific time frame.
Okay. So you just need to report back whatever that time frame that the council sets.
Rarely do they exceed a year in duration, I can tell you that.
Okay.
But you don't need to identify tonight a specific time date that you're going to complete your process.
And is there a, because obviously within the council there's five members, and members use their Brown Act cards on individual council members. So is there a conflict if two members who are speaking, for example, I use my Brown Act card with Council Member Paulding on this. So if for some reason there's an ad hoc committee and it's Council Member Paulding and Council Member Barnage, is there a conflict there?
Well, there's a Brown Act violation there.
Yes.
So the two of you are dealing with this issue. You can't gain consensus from another council member. Okay. Suffice to say, just like in any other activity or subject matter.
So it looks like we have the ad hoc committee.
So moved.
Those are my questions. Thank you.
Question?
No questions. Only comments.
Questions? Let's open. Oh,
can I just one?
I thought you said no, and then
yes,
you said,
yes, okay. Please. Just yeah. One. So, if an ad hoc committee has to have a defined or specific task, is a strategic plan a nebulous topic, or do we provide that with some direction as a council, like you will work on the strategic plan given these parameters, or they can just go in and talk about a strategic plan generically in any form?
It could be as simple as saying, please refine the strategic plan concepts we saw a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And it can be as detailed as the council wants to make it.
Okay. Thank you.
That I don't have questions that weren't already covered, so let's open this up to public comment. Anyone like to come forward? I'm seeing no one, I'll close public comment. And comments. Mr. Paulding, you said you had some.
Yeah. So appreciate the input from staff there. And the clarification, essentially what I envision for this ad hoc committee is, well, first of all, let me back up. The staff report provides alternatives, the ad hoc committee, the standing committee, for example. I think there was some previous discussion about the value of a standing committee bringing on members of the community. However, what I have envisioned and what I've discussed with Council Member George is an ad hoc committee comprised of ideally us, if possible, because we've already been talking about economic development, strategic planning in general, would have a very short duration, such as 30 days, to essentially take the strategic plan concepts that have been presented, work with staff directly to, I think as Jim put it, define a more presentable and effective format, talk about how the community can be engaged in the process. And so the mission of the ad hoc committee would simply be to brainstorm the how there and then bring that back to the council for decision making. I would also like to see included in the mission of the ad hoc committee to simply explore uses for the $750,000 in SB 1090 funds. To again bring back those options to council for decision making. So the three main things would be the refinement of the strategic plan with staff, exploring community outreach ideas and opportunities, and the SB 1090 funds with a 30-day lifespan. That's essentially what I'm thinking at this point.
I would just add to that. I would just add to that measurements as well. So key markers of
benchmarks.
Yes, thank you. I wrote down measurements. I'm like, that's not the right word. But other than that, I concur with Councilmember Paulding.
Councilmember Barnage?
No, if Councilmember Paulding and Councilmember George are interested in taking this on, I thank them for their hard work. If they are willing to do that, I'm perfectly willing to appoint them to do that.
Mayor Pro Tem?
So I had originally looked at both concepts, and I really like the idea of the standing committee in the sense that it did provide community feedback, participation, notification of the meeting to where people could show up and provide their feedback, because I think that's an important piece to any type of planning. I noticed you asked the question was, can you have an ad hoc committee then move into a standing committee? Was that a thought you had in your mind, or
I was just curious as to the process. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's so many loose ends right now that to try to clean it up before we involve the public might be in the public's best interest. That was
yes.
It.
Yes, I understand that, and I appreciate the concept. I really like the idea. I just want to feel that as we have the discussion, I want to make sure we do move into that forum where the community does have input.
Absolutely.
And so as long as that's a consideration as we move forward, I think I appreciate the two of you wanting to step up and at least defining it for now, and then we can move forward with some substance.
And I'll add in that I, too, was leaning towards the standing committee, and then I realized, now, wait a minute, we got rid of a bunch of standing committees because they didn't have these ongoing needs, and having meetings where you have to cancel the meeting creates staff time and problems. And so I thought, you know what, we're not ready to do that yet. So I'm happy with this as well. I just, my only concern is that we make sure that when we do the refinement with staff, that that's following the council in its whole and the direction that it has made, rather than I'm concerned that I don't know if concern, that's not the right word, but I just want to make sure that it doesn't go down a rabbit hole that the whole council hasn't discussed. So that's my only caveat. But other than that, again, as Councilmember Barnard says, I thank you for wanting to take that on. And I think a 30-day duration and the things that were proposed there are good. And I think that we'll perhaps you will flesh out what community input looks like, and whether that's a series of meetings or, and maybe those series of meetings will graduate into a standing committee later or something. But I appreciate your willingness to really dig into the weeds on that. So let us open this up to public comment. Oh, we already did. So nobody's coming up. I want you all to come up. Maybe it would be best if you made a...
Do we need a motion, or was there enough direction there? It sounds like we need a motion, right?
I think it's better to have a motion to create the ad hoc.
So I would move that we create an ad hoc committee comprised of two council members. That would be myself and Councilmember Lon George, to do three things. Consider refinement of our strategic plan in terms of making it more presentable and in a more effective format through engagement with staff. Consider uses for the $750,000 in SB 1090 mitigation funds that can be presented back to council, and consider options for community outreach, essentially that would explore how and at what intervals we would involve the community in the strategic planning process.
And second, the benchmarks?
Yes, sorry. That would include benchmarks and have a 30-day lifespan.
Second. Motion is second. Any discussion? Can we get roll call, please?
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Stort?
Yes.
Mayor Ray Russell?
Yes. I'm excited about that.
I'm so excited. I have goosebumps.
That is great.
It feels like we're moving forward finally on that. That's great. Okay. That takes us to item 12, City Council Reports. So I am first. CGPIA is in July. South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District did meet. We just met last week. Let me pull up my board packet here. The only thing that really came out of that meeting was that, besides the fact that I was elected board chair for the calendar year, is that we received the financial audit for 18-19, because 19-20 hasn't happened yet. So we got an unmodified clean, which is the best we could get. And the most important part of that, if you, especially those of you at home who watch this, the most important part of that is, as much as right about when I took office, we were almost 3 years behind on those audits. And I have to give some serious kudos to the administrator, Mr. Gent, who has really cleaned things up over there. Get it? Cleaned things up at the sanitation district. And has made a priority in getting that all back on track. So we are now on track back to what should be annual reporting that follows, legal protocols and all those things. So that's very exciting. TBID, I was not at that meeting. That was Councilmember George, so I will let her report on that during her councilmember report or council report outs, and that's it. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. I have a couple of meetings coming up this next week, so the only one I have to report on is the IWMA. We met today, and I think the biggest thing we talked about, we're in the process of looking at all of our ordinances that are handled through the IWMA pertaining to plastic bags, paint disposal, battery disposal, and things like that. So one of the first ones we're going to tackle is an ordinance that started in 2012, was the single-use grocery bag issue, to where, you know, it's all over the state now, to where people are encouraged to bring in their own usable bags. But we're going to look at the possibility of enhancing that a little bit further to include bags at the produce and meat counters, and stopping the use of those within our community. The science and research behind the single-use plastic bags is pretty significant, and the damage not only does it do to our environment, but also the machinery that's out in our landfill trying to separate the plastics into usable plastics or resellable plastics or whatever it may be. So it's a little step in a big scheme of how we deal with our trash, but we'll be talking about those in at our next meeting with the hope of an ordinance coming forward, and we'll probably go through something like this again with some other issues coming forward with recyclables. That's all I have.
That's it. All right. Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. Let's see. The Homeless Services Oversight Council met on January 15th, and we voted in the executive board and made minor changes to bylaws to increase members but make categories less restricted so more people could serve. We authorized the shelter point in time count, and this isn't the count we have every 2 years for HUD. This is only the count for people in shelters on that day. We voted on the method for the regular point in time count in 2021, and then also HSOC will be focusing on an update to our 10-year plan, and members also want to discuss our aging population as well and how we can have warming centers open all winter nights instead of random nights, when we have stipulations on the weather specifically, just generally open all the time. North County has some. And then on Zone 3, this is a little bit old information. I know Shane shared some of this at our last meeting. Let's see. Lopez at the time was 52.3% full, and the year-to-date rainfall for the water year was 8.36 inches. As you heard from Shane, contract changes will be coming to Zone 3 after the TAC approves them, and the most significant proposed contract changes being suggested are in regards to surplus water. They haven't been all sort of ironed out yet, but basically the changes that we're talking about provide more flexibility and the ability for each agency to store water for the future. And it improves the flexibility of multi-year water supply planning and also provides incentives for the agency to preserve the water in the reservoir. So that was really the only discussion germane specifically to AG. And that was it.
Thank you. Councilmember Paulding.
Thank you. I'm just pulling up my notes from the SLOCOG board meeting that was held on the 5th. 1 second. Oh, and I've lost them. I had them up.
We'll be here in 2 weeks.
Yeah. I want to share with the council one specific item, and it's very hard for me to do these reports because we have a lot on our agendas, obviously, so it would take all night for us to cover every item that we approve at each one of these meetings.
So it's probably good you lost them.
Yeah, perhaps. Of notable importance was a presentation provided by SLOCOG staff that essentially presented an analysis of the affordable housing situation in our county, and it had some very important and alarming statistics. And so if anybody's interested in that, I can email you a link to that specific agenda item in that staff report. For example, we see that we have, I believe, 18% of the housing stock in the county
essentially is designated as vacant because it is being used seasonally or through short-term rentals. And so there was a lot more presented in that staff report on housing. In addition, there was a nice comparison of pavement condition indexes for the whole county, each of the seven cities and the county. Well, the county's numbers weren't in there, but we were able to compare statistical information, and to me that was valuable to help see where we are when we're looking at how many miles of road we have, what the current target PCI is, where we are now, how much it's costing us in annual maintenance. So good information to look at. And then we also had an APCD meeting, nothing of major importance to report at this point in time. I'm going to do a better job at providing more itemized reports in the future. I apologize. We haven't had a meeting of the South County Transit Board since our last report out, nor has the Briscoe Halcyon Interchange Subcommittee met. Thank you.
I wonder if the information you were just talking about pavement would be helpful to staff as we're talking about what to do and how to fund going forward. So maybe that would be something that you could get to them.
Yes, and if I can just share one more little nugget of information there. What we see, if I recall correctly, is the city of SLO, for example, having, I think it was like 150 miles of road compared to, how many miles of road do we have? Like 30?
I'd say 40 or
40?
50.
Okay.
50 probably would have been the number.
Yeah. Their pavement condition index is much greater. So obviously they've been putting more money towards road maintenance, yet their annual costs in terms of maintenance are almost close to ours, which is a little bit scary. But it's the same thing that we see. If we hold off on putting money towards maintenance now, the cost only increases, and it increases exponentially. So getting ahead of that, the sooner the better, is important. So good information. I'll share that with Jim, and then he can maybe distribute that out to Thank
Perfect.
You.
Thank you very much for that report. Councilmember George.
Okay, so I went to the TBID meeting, and the only interesting report there is in December 2018, we didn't have marketing for the city, and so this December, they did no marketing. So it was the only month in the whole year that was a really accurate comparison from the previous year. So no advertising in December versus not having an advertising agency showed that our numbers didn't dip at all. So the year's worth of advertising was enough to keep people coming back to our website and to our social media without having to pump a lot of money out. So that was really good news there. Other than that, there was really no other news for TBID. Community Action Partnership, CAPSLO, they voted a new board. Other than that, nothing else really applied to us. RAC was canceled. The Regional Water Initiatives, I've yet to attend one meeting, and I'm hoping that that will change because that is directly what our council had wanted as far as feedback and information on Central Coast Blue. And I've been on that, I don't know if that's a group, a board, a committee, I don't know what that is, but I have yet to attend one meeting, and I'd like that to change. Visit SLOCAL. I just went to a 3-hour stakeholders meeting working on their strategic plan. And the one thing that I did there that was very different from all the other partners, there were a lot of hotels represented, but I was the only city representative there. And the nice thing about that is I was advocating for our city. I was advocating for our residents. And really the number one thing is, when we're advertising for all of this tourism, I need to make sure that I, instill in Visit SLOCAL the need to maintain our quality of life here and the quality of life of the residents, so that with all the tourists that come in, we definitely need that tourism dollar. So I'm not saying that's not important, but it needs to be a nice balance so that the people who are living here day in and day out appreciate the tourists that come in and don't resent them. The other thing that I stressed was workforce housing, because that supply is very low. And also, we haven't really touched on it, but really when we're talking about getting our message out there. We really need to talk about our message as our community and what our community stands for and the lifestyle that we have here. So with the new push towards trying to drive people more and more here, sustainability in our lifestyle, single-use products, is really a huge thing that they hadn't addressed, and I really wanted them to touch on that. So more hydration stations, less single-use water bottles, restaurants, encouraging restaurants to not use disposable products and products that they can wash, or even bring your own products and bring your own plates and silverware and stuff like that. So those are the main things that I advocated for. Among a lot of, it was 3 hours and it was great. So we'll see how that goes. They have probably 4 or 5 more of those stakeholder meetings before they'll start formulating their strategic plan, and I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you very much. Council communications. Anyone?
I just have a couple. let's see. I wanted to thank Marcy Batita. She has been cleaning up the tree wells on Bridge Street for a couple of years. She's turning over the job to, I'm not really sure who else, I think she had maybe spoken with Bob Lund or something. But I just wanted to thank her for doing that for the last couple of years. That was nice of her to volunteer. Also, our We Heart AG volunteer event is going to be April 19th from 8 to noon. And the website signups will start on Valentine's Day because it's We Heart AG. So look for that. And if you'd like to volunteer that day for a couple hours, we have projects for children, teens, all the way up to senior citizens. And then also I just wanted to sort of touch on when we might have a study session with RRM for the East Grand Avenue Master Plan. Only because I know that we have to, they're looking for information before they go further, and if we're going to do strategic planning, we kind of have to put the cart before the horse or not put the cart before the horse. Anyway, so I wanted to see if we could get that on an agenda very quickly.
Whitney is making contact about the East Grand Avenue plan, and I can get more updates later.
If needed, I would certainly second that in terms of getting a staff report or a report from them as to their progress. That'd be great.
Okay. Thank you.
I just have one small thing. The Harvest Festival has a new chair this year, and he's put together a great team. However, he still needs someone to chair activities and booths. So if anyone is interested in helping with the Harvest Festival, please reach out to me or to the city, and then we'll get you in contact with the right person.
I just have one. In my
Your
vast,
mic?
What's that?
It's mic.
Oh, I guess so. Okay, see. In my vast experience as a Mayor Pro Tem, I have been asked to attend a Mayor's Forum on Thursday. So unfortunately, our Mayor will be hard at work, so I will be representing the city at the Mayor's Forum. This will be the first time in my life. It's a luncheon that people have to pay for, where people actually have to pay to show up to listen to me speak. So
get ready for the Facebook blowback. I got that last year. So
great. Thank you. All right.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
Practice your really good jokes. Have like a couple of them.
Break my dad joke.
Yeah.
Dad
yeah. Okay. Wear your dad joke shirt.
Thank you very much for doing that. We're the only ones, I think, who are not sending the mayor. I'm sure that everybody understands. I'm molding America's youth while you're doing that. So, very important job. And I'm making headway. It's almost June. I'm turning them into juniors. So this is good. That takes us to item 14. This is closed session conference with legal counsel on existing litigation. I'll let you maybe read that, and we'll open it up to public comment.
Tonight's closed session is a conference with legal counsel existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D1. The name of the case is the appeal of CalPERS determination dated January 26, 2017, CalPERS reference number 2017-0305.
Would anyone like to come forward and comment on this? All right, seeing no one, I'll close this, bring it back to the council, and we'll adjourn to closed session. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.